This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, this is going to be a very difficult interview, but I am very happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper one of my favorite authors, Jonathan Santlaffer. He was here a few months ago, and we were talking about the very brilliant anthology that he created and edited. And I was so thrilled to help promote that book. The name of it is It Occurs to Me That I Am America, and it's a brilliant anthology. And I'm happy to welcome Jonathan back. Today we're going to be talking about a very personal book that he's written. It's called The Widower's Notebook, a memoir. And, it's a hard book, but it's an important book, and I'm so happy to have you on the program today, Jonathan.
Thank you, Patsy. You know, yes, I would say in some ways, of course, it is a tough book, but I'll tell you, last night, I'm just sort of recovering from it. Joyce Carol Oates and myself were at the 92nd Street Y talking about, she was interviewing me about my book. And we had the house laughing at least 50 or 60% of the time. And, you know, I think these are things we all, you know, loss and grief and all of that is part of life. And there is humor in it and absurdity and love and all of that. I certainly didn't write my book to be a sad book.
No.
I wrote it as I hope that it's a book that will help people, you know, in many ways.
I think it will. I think it is such a beautiful tribute to your wife, whose name was Joy. And it's funny, you know, when I started this program 3 years ago, there's been a lot of threads that sort of mysterious threads that I, you know, I talk to authors who have lived in the same place that I have lived, or who whose book is set in a place where I have actually sat in that particular restaurant. So there are a lot of connections. And when I named this program Joy on Paper, I did it because joy has always been a very important word to me. And for me, I always thought of my husband and my two sons as the joys of my life. And when I got the idea for the program, and it was 4:15 in the morning, as I was driving to the hospital to see my husband, who had surgery. And the idea for a radio program came into my head at that moment at 4:15 because I was listening to somebody interview an author, and I could tell from the interview that that person had not read the book, because I knew the author's work very well. And I was upset by it. And I said, well, I could do better than that. I want to talk to authors and really promote their books. And so I got the idea. And as I was driving to the hospital, and the reason I was going at 4:15 is my husband had knee surgery. The first night I slept in the room with him. The second night I felt confident that the nurses, because he's a big flirt, the nurses were all hanging around him for stories and that they take good care of him. And at 4:15 he called me, and you know, you get scared when you get a call in the middle of the night. Although I wasn't really sleeping, I was in my jogging clothes ready to head off at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he called and he said, I said, how are you? He said, I'm fine. I said, are you really okay? He said, yeah, they gave me graham crackers and some apple juice. And I, just from his voice, I knew. And of course, also having been married for many years, I knew, and I was prepared, and I had cinnamon rolls ready to go. So that's why I popped in the car at 4:15, and I'm on the way to the hospital listening to this interview, and I'm thinking, oh, wow, I really have to do a radio program. And I immediately, the name just came into my head, joy on paper, because it is such a joy to see your words on paper, and it is also such a joy to read. So that's where I got the word joy on paper. But it's been funny. Over the years, you know, I've just been doing this just over 3 years, I've managed to get this far. And but people will come up and they'll, or even sometimes in you know, radio interviews, they'll call me Joy. And I say, no, my
really?
Name is...
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I say, no, my name is Patsy with a Z. That's why I always tell people Patsy with a Z. And but I don't mind being called Joy, and I, you know, but when it happens, and it happened not too long ago, and I thought of your joy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think my joy was very aptly named. And, you know, somebody last night said, which, and a lot of the reviews have said, that the book is also a tribute to her. And that, of course, makes me very happy, you know. You know, it's funny that you're saying that you got the idea for the show in the middle of the night, driving to see your husband who was in the hospital. And it strikes me that even in our worst moments, sometimes these wonderful things can come to us, you know, and that look what you created out of that, you know, aside from him getting graham crackers and, you know, apple juice, you managed to get a show out of it that is important. So yeah, I'll tell you something else that struck me. There's a chapter in my book in which I'm at a dinner party. My memoir began in notebooks that I was keeping after my wife passed away, because it was a way to sort of keep myself sane. I had never done that before, kept a diary or anything, but I did. And I recorded this dinner party because at the dinner party, a group of people were attacking a book that somebody had written, a grief memoir. And it turned out none of them had read it. They just didn't like the idea of it. And I ended up spending most of the night defending this person because I had read it, but also because I was so appalled at the idea. It was somebody who had lost their wife and remarried and found happiness. And it was sort of as if people resented the idea that somebody could find happiness again. And I tried to say to people, you know, just because you have lost, it's not that you're going to get over that. You don't get over that. But you can move forward and still be happy again. I think that's a really important thing for people to know. You know, and so I was quite vocal that night, which is not necessarily my way, you know? But
well, I agree. The reason I really am very proud to be able to have you on the program and to talk about this book is that I think it will help people. It's so in a number of ways, because one, I'm sure everyone is curious to know what happened to Joy. So mm-hmm. we'll talk about mm-hmm. that. And this is a lesson in itself, just what happened to her. And
that's
having
true.
Gone through something similar, I think it's a learning thing that people really should read this book just for that. Then also your insights, you know, as I'm reading the book at one point I'm saying, oh gee, I wish this was a novel. I mean, I wish it wasn't real. If it would be a novel, it would be just so, you know, it'd be so great. And I had to every once in a while stop myself and say, no, it's real. This pain is real. But you capture her so beautifully, and you do make us smile at the way that she would react to some of the things that you do. So it was.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Yeah. So many things last night. It's still very much in my head because Joyce Carol Oates is an old friend of mine, and she's just, you know, she's one of our most brilliant writers. She's so generous and kind, and she was saying that her, you know, she read my book twice. She said, and she kept thinking of it like, she said, you know, there are like four plays in your book, and it reads almost like a play. And I said, somebody else said it reads like a novel. And I think it's because when I looked at my notebook and started transcribing them, of course, you know, you make selections. You can't put everything in. And You know, that was a very difficult decision for me. I didn't think I would ever write a book like this, nor did I ever want to. But when I decided that it was happening, I kind of heard my wife's voice saying, you'd better make this the best book you ever wrote, you know? And Joy said something, I'm trying to think of what it was about the way I present Joy and our marriage. And I said, well, you know, Joy, somebody was trying to tell me in front of Joy to do something. And Joy turned to her and said, oh, don't waste your time. He's untrainable. And that just made everybody, that was very early in the evening, and it kind of loosened everybody up. Everyone started laughing. But I think that in many ways, I think because I am a novelist and I've written, you know, five novels that I've published and a lot of stories, it's innate in me that I don't know, that I need to tell a story well. And I think that unconsciously or maybe consciously in some ways, when I put this together, I wanted it to read really well. I mean, people have said, the reviews have been saying that it reads like a page turner, and that surprises me, but I'm happy about it, you know, because, I mean, isn't that part of one's job, no matter what? You know, I wish it weren't true either. Believe me, Patsy, believe me. But I want people to read it and be engaged with it and be moved by it and have it take something in about their own lives and their own losses and be able to deal with those things. You know, we have a culture that doesn't really deal with that very well, right?
Exactly. And it's just because you are just a great writer. And, you know, I was trying to think back on your books and just sort of reflecting that, you know, your books have always been just very compelling in and of themselves. And I remember the first one I read of yours was the Murder Notebook. And I was so taken. I was so taken with your character there, Nate Rodriguez, who is a forensic sketch artist.
I miss Nate.
You know, I draw and I paint, and I'm not as good as you, but I just was drawn to the character right away. You know, because it's something I love art. I love and I love sketching, and so. I thought, wow, this is, you know, this is, that's, as I said, that was the first of your books, and I was just...
Thank you. You know, I have to say that, I don't mean to interrupt
No.
you. The first Nate Rodriguez book is Anatomy of Fear, and that's my favorite of all of my novels, and I loved creating Nate Rodriguez for just the reason you say, because I wanted to be able to also do some drawing in my book. You know, I was trained as a visual artist, so... I have Nate, he's a sketch artist, a forensic artist, and I have his sketches in the book.
I know, I love
it. Yeah, and people say to me, so are you really Nate? And I say, well, you know, if I were tall, Puerto Rican, and handsome, yes, and I'm none of those things. So, but, you know, a little bit of yourself goes into everything. The drawing part went into it, for sure. And I do, and it is my favorite of my novels, so... I'm glad that you like that character. People keep asking me to bring Nate back, and I'm hoping I will. You know, it's something I've been thinking about.
Well, it's funny. You really should, because I've been thinking, oh, I've been sort of... One of the things that happens with me when I read a book, because I wrote screenplays. I've had three of my scripts, spec scripts, optioned, and I've written scripts for books for other, you know, for authors, and that was a number of years ago. But when I read a book, I see it in my head as a movie. And over the past 3 years, as I've been, you know, getting more and more authors who I read their books, and there are some books that just the minute I read it, I go into it and I see it as a film, and sometimes I have to like pinch myself. It wasn't a film. It was a book. It was an actual book, and I have to go back and look at the pages. And I remember thinking, when I first read Nate Rodriguez, I went back, and I of course I had to read the first book, and I I'm a great fan. I can see this character. I can see it as a television series. I'm telling you right now.
Let me tell you, it had such a... I'll tell you very, very quickly. So that book came out. It won the Nero Award for the best crime novel of the year. And everybody wanted it. Got optioned all over the place. And Kiefer Sutherland optioned it and was going to do it as a show for Fox. And he wasn't going to play Nate. He was producing and directing. And then he went to jail for DWI. And then it went to Paramount. And then they were working on it. And then there was a writer's strike for like 4 months. And then it went to another company. So it's one of those kind of crazy histories where it was almost a television series. And it could happen again. But, well, you know, who knows? You know, you just never know. My first novel, it has been in and out of development for film, The Death Artist, like 10 times. And so I try not to pop open the champagne until I'm sitting in the theater with the popcorn, you know?
Exactly. But I'm telling you that it's funny. I'm doing a sort of a little side issue with my. I'm starting a blog because I want to get back in contact with the people that I know in Hollywood too, and sort of open their eyes to some of the books and some of the authors whose characters would be so refreshing and so much more interesting than what we have today. And I know this problem of I've had my films ready to go, ready to shoot. We were supposed to shoot a film here with Debbie Reynolds called The Sunshine Pilot. Oh. And we were set and everything, you know, we had the $1.5 million Florida tax credit. Mm-hmm. Everything was ready to go. And that's when the whole financial crisis happened in 2008.
Oh,
and
yeah,
our you know, people financing just collapsed.
You know, but you should start that blog because, you know, the fact is that so many great books or great characters that are created are not seen. You know, the only books that actually get seen are books that are very successful, like super successful. And there are many books that where there are characters that would be amazing television series characters or movie characters that go under the radar, you know?
Well, that's,
so I think it would be a great thing to do.
Well, that's what I'm going to do because I really have to get through to people and explain how we can just make some, because if I hear one more time about how they're going to redo James Bond as Jamie Bond, I mean,
oh, God,
get real, get
I
real.
Know,
you know, it's just awful there. And I have so many authors who have really wonderful, wonderful, strong female characters who would be just terrific, but they don't even look at them because they want to go back and do a remake of something over and over. You know, and instead of finding something fresh, I mean, I think Nate Rodriguez, I can see him in my head. What a character this would be. You know, instead of doing another repeat of Magnum PI, you know, come out with some originality. You know, it's like people need to have these new characters. And
I agree. You know, Nate Rodriguez, I will say, did not go under the radar. I mean, a lot of Hollywood people and television people were really interested because Nate was not only, I think, and hope, an interesting character, but he was sort of an old trope as something new. In other words, like the old cop show, but from the point of view of the sketch artist. And lots of people wanted to do it. So, you know, I still have hope about that, and I think it would be great. But, you know, I also do think, in reaction to something you said before, that I hope and believe that things are changing enough so that there are some really terrific women writers out there and that a lot of inroads are in Hollywood, and particularly in television because there's more access, that more women characters will be emerging. You know, I really believe that. So I have a lot of women writer friends and a lot of, you know, who are doing great work, and I think it's inevitable, you know, that that will happen, and I hope so.
I do too, and you know, it's funny. I'm glad that we had a minute here to talk about something. Other than I know all of my listeners will want to know the story here sure. about Joy, because it's like, why, who was she? And mm-hmm. and I think one of the things that I want to talk to you about is her book, because yeah. it is really quite amazing. Now, you know, it's always difficult when I'm supposed to, you know, take a commercial break, but I just, mm-hmm. I don't feel like doing a commercial break with you. I just, it doesn't seem appropriate. I had the poet laureate on, Juan Felipe Herrera, and I said to myself, should I break this up and do a commercial, even though I love my pillows? Am I going to, you know, you really don't want to do that to the poet laureate. You know, it doesn't seem right. And it doesn't seem right to interrupt this interview with a sort of a crass commercial. But one needs to do these things.
Yes, I understand.
But instead of that, I want to play a song. And uh-huh. it's very relevant to your story. And when we come back, I want you to tell us about what happened to Joy.
I will.
Okay, sure. So we'll just play a little bit of a song.
Lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely. I have nobody. Mr. Lonely, wish I had someone to call on the phone. Now I'm a soldier, a lonely soldier, away from home, through no wish of my own. That's why I'm lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely. I wish that I could go back home. Letters, never a letter. I get no letter.
Well, I love that song.
Well, a great Bobby Vinton.
Yes.
I just could have listened to that all afternoon. You know, Patsy, I guess you read my book, and it's broken into chapters, and one of the chapters is called Mr. Lonely. And it's actually, I think, a very touching but also funny scene, because I am walking through the supermarket, and I'm feeling very sorry for myself, surrounded by couples and couples with kids, and feeling awfully sad, you know, shopping for myself. And I realize the song Mr. Lonely is playing in my head. And it suddenly struck me as sort of funny that I was having so much self-pity, you know. But, you know, it just life can be very absurd and sad, but it's funny, when that song came on, I thought, oh my God, I can't believe it, you know?
Well, you know, I love that. Again, this shows what a great writer you are, and why this book, as I'm reading it and thinking, you know, I wish this was a novel, because it is a very, that little story about the couple at the checkout counter.
The checkout, yeah.
Yeah, tell us about that. I thought that was just beautifully drawn.
Well, you know, I was walking through, as I said, and the supermarket, feeling very sorry for myself, and then I'm at the checkout counter, and there's this beautiful young couple, and they have this young kid who's eating what I imagined looked like an $8 artisanal chocolate bar. And I'm sitting in my head thinking, oh, I hate them, you know. And then the kid offers me a lick of his mushy chocolate bar, which I didn't take, but I said, what a nice, generous boy you are. And his parents had been fighting, I should say. And then they suddenly looked at me, and then they looked at their kid, and they smiled, and my whole mood changed. I thought, oh, you know, they're just regular people, too, you know, trying to get through life. And it was actually a wonderful moment for me. So, you know, that's a scene in my book that I remembered that very clearly because I had written about it in my notebook because it changed the mood of my day, which had been very sad and somber. I will tell you and your listeners about what happened, if you'd like
yes.
for me to do that. Well, first I should say that my wife Joy and I were college sweethearts in art school together, and we met when we were very, very young. We were married for 40 years, you know, and I say to people, you know, we had a great marriage, not the most perfect marriage because there is no such thing. We had our ups and downs and our fights, but we weathered those storms together, you know. And we have a wonderful daughter, Dory. And so Joy basically went in for outpatient, very ordinary routine tendon replace, you know, surgery of her knee. And she died. And she came home, seemed fine, and in a matter of minutes died in my arms. And I don't even know how I can say that. It's 5 years now since my wife died. I can now say that. I couldn't speak about it for 2 years. I was in such shock and denial and depression. And I said to many people last night who came up to me after, I said, you know, who would tell me their stories? I'd say, you know, who would say things like, my husband died 8 months ago, my wife died a year ago. I'd say, you know, it's hard to believe, but you will survive this. You will get better. So my wife was a food historian. She wrote a great book called Food City, which when she passed away, she left a 400,000-word manuscript.
Woo!
Which was, yeah, and it had to be cut down to 150,000 words for publication. And my daughter and myself and my sister-in-law took it upon ourselves, and we hired independent editors, and the book was published, and it was a finalist for a James Beard Award. It won a Culinary Institute Award. So, you know, it's a kind of bittersweet story because, of course, I will say that we had a big book party for my wife's book, and it was probably one of the saddest nights of my life, even though I put on a happy face because I was thrilled the book was published. But to have had that book party and not have my wife there to enjoy, you know, the fruits of her labor was just something that was terribly, tragically sad for me. I'll also say, I think, you know, people ask me what I miss most, and I'd say it's the unforgettable moments. You know what I mean? I mean, the forgettable moments, rather, when you just, they're not important moments. It's great to share the important things, but it's kind of the ordinary stuff of life that one misses most, you know, when you have a long-term partner. I was very fortunate. I think we were both very fortunate. And I've come to realize that, you know, having more than 40 years with somebody, I was lucky. And I've come to a point where I can say to myself, you were lucky. Joy was not lucky. She never was able to enjoy her older years, you know, and that is tragic. But, you know, we were lucky to have each other, and getting a
yeah, I know, and
here,
I
Patty.
And I think, you know, the wonderful thing about her book is that this book is going to be, I mean, it's going to be a classic forever, for mm-hmm. for I mean a century from now when people are writing books, you know, when authors are writing books and they're setting their books in New York City in different time periods, they are going to be picking up Joy's book because
that's true.
It is such. I mean, I don't know what you did with those other 250,000 words. I hope they're somewhere because there is so much detail in this book. And for any author who wants to really, you know, make their book richer and deeper, yeah, to have these references to the food and to understand, you know, it was really exciting when I read about how she was inspired actually to put together this book about the wonderful food and the history of the food in New York City, because you know so many people don't realize just how much, you know, how important.
Yeah. You know, that's what happened. You know, Joy was a researcher originally, and she's a great researcher. And what she discovered was that at one point in history, New York City fed the world. And people don't realize that. And so her book covers 400 years from the pilgrims to the artisanal Brooklyn food makers of today. But, yeah, it's become a resource for many, many people. And what I'm trying to do with the remaining pages that weren't used is to set up an archive so that other writers can use that information. But, you know, it was a life's work, and it is, I think, an extremely important book. I love that you say people will always be reading it. I don't think it has a shelf life, which is great. And I devote a chapter in my memoir, The Widower's Notebook, to Joy's book, because it was very difficult for us to finish that book and get it made well. But I was determined to do that, and you know, I felt, oh goodness, if I felt anything, I felt like I really owed that to Joy, and I'm certainly thrilled that that happened, that that book exists, and that it's gotten such great attention, you know. So, it was really something. I mean, the stories in that book. I hope everybody finds it. I mean, it's easy to find Food City, you know, that it does. I know it will have lasting value. I agree with you for sure. You know, it's interesting because my publisher at Penguin said to me about my book, about my memoir, that she thought it would have lasting value for people for many years too, and that made me very happy as well. You know, I think the greatest things that have happened in just the last few days is that the reviews have compared my book to Joan Didion's book, The Year of Magical Thinking. And let me tell you, that sends chills up and down my spine, because there is nobody like Joan Didion, you know. So people have been saying my book is the male version of Joan Didion's book. And boy, that's pretty great, you know.
It is.
Yeah. Like I said, I didn't want to write it, but when I decided to write it, it just had to be the best thing I could possibly do.
And, of course, when we talk about a novel, it reading like a novel, one of the reasons that it reads like a novel is that we don't actually know what happens, because it was not a simple thing. There was a lot of mystery involved, and a lot of, for you, many years of frustration in order to find out exactly what caused her death. And
right.
And it, for me, I because, as I said, my husband had this knee surgery and things went wrong with it. Now, luckily, he survived, but things went wrong. And it's a cautionary tale to everyone that you don't know what's going to happen. Something as simple as an outpatient procedure, you think is, you know, will just be okay. But you have to, there's so many things to consider. And I think reading about the frustration that you had with everything is part of, an important part of the story. And I think anybody who reads this book will be, take a sort of a moment to reflect on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want, you know, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking, I don't want people to be scared and to not do the things they have to do medically. But what I would say is, you know, the morning that my wife, which was after her operation, did not feel well, she called the doctor's office. It was a Friday in August. And the receptionist or whomever said, well, why don't you wait till your Tuesday post-op, you know, appointment. And the biggest regret we both, and she said, well, if the doctor's not worried, I'm not worried. The biggest regret, and what I would say to everyone is, if the doctor says that to you and you don't feel well, go to the emergency room right away. We didn't. You know, we thought, well, if the doctor's office seems to think it's nothing special, so we're not going to worry about it. And, you know, an hour later, my loft was filled with firemen and EMT people, and
it's hard, but that's just one of the many reasons that I think people should read this book, because as I said, your writing is just so good. Get so moved, and I was really happy actually, you know, that you have your sketches in there, because every once in a while you'd get to a sketch and we could just stop and sort of take a breath and look at the sketches, because they are so so telling. The one of you and Dory is just fantastic. It's a beautiful.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I just want to say to people that I think it's really important that people do something, you know, whatever that work is, and you know, whether it's gardening or cooking or something, because you need to do. And Joyce Carol Oates and I were talking about that last night, how she said how going to teaching was really important for her. And for me, because I was trained as an artist, I would sit down at my work table and I would do drawings of my wife and myself and my daughter, and it was extremely helpful to me. And I probably did 80 drawings. And it was a way to stay close, but also a way to be focused on something else. And my publisher wanted to put, and we chose about 13 or 14 of the drawings, which we put in the book. And I think you're right. They're a place to pause and look at something nice. But, you know, I also, Patsy, I really, you know, my book goes back and forth in time. I think it's the portrait of a marriage. I think it's fun times and wonderful times and funny memories and bringing up children. And it's not just, it does talk about how we cope with grief and how we, you know, get through sadness and all of that. But it, I think it's much more than that. And I can't tell you that I planned it that way. I just wrote it as I felt, you know, the most honest way I could write it. And also I was encouraged by a lot of people, I mean, mainly by women friends, which is interesting, because they would say to me, men don't write these kinds of books. And I think I was very typical of that, very Western man with sort of closed up emotionally. But this incident in my life changed me significantly. And I didn't write my book for men. I wrote it for everyone. But I think the fact that I am writing it from a man's point of view, I think makes it different, and I think I hope touches men and women in a different way, or another way, let's say, an additional way. I think you must have seen that, because I do talk about it.
Yes, and I want to mention one of the particular sketches the combination. There's a sketch of you looking very somber,
very grim.
And then the next one is of you, of Joy behind you. And she is so beautiful, and the smile on her face, and just that the joy of Joy. Oh wow! I think that's just amazing.
Thank you so much. You know, I did that drawing of myself after I came back from that incident at the supermarket, and I had been feeling very grim most of the day, and I decided I wanted to see what people saw when they looked at me. So I stared into the mirror, and I did this drawing of myself. And it's a really, my daughter looked at it and says, "Oh, my God, Daddy, you look so awful in that drawing. It looks like you, but it's just awful." And then, so I did that, and then I wanted to add joy to the picture because she was such, she was part of my life. And the minute, so I took the same drawing, and I just threw joy right with me in the picture, and it changed it. I mean, you don't even want to look at my grim face. You just want to look at your happy face.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, that was really a good thing. And a good thing for me is as soon as I added joy to the drawing, it changed it for me. You know, it really changed it for me. It was almost like I want to do another one where I'm smiling, you know, and not looking so awful.
Well, so. It is a beautiful sketch, and we feel this, that there she is standing behind you and watching over you, and it's a very moving sketch.
Thank you so much.
Well, you know, one of the things with this program is I always encourage everyone that, you know, if you have a story, just get it down on paper and start writing. I have had some, you know, books, memoirs that were written about losses, and I've always, you know, I want to give authors time and the opportunity to promote their books. So with this book, particularly because I think you are just so amazing, and everything that you do is fantastic, and you know, I'm always so moved by your writing, and of course you participated in two of the anthologies of have been very important to me too, because I've had them I've had a bunch of the authors from the anthologies for Alive in Shape and Color and In Sunlight and Shadow.
They've with been Lawrence Block.
Yeah, I love him.
I love him. He is such a wonderful, generous man, a brilliant writer, filled with heart and soul, and I've been very proud to have and lucky to know him and to be included in those anthologies of his. You know, I'm thrilled by it. But you know, I agree with you also that you don't have to write your story with the idea that other people are going to read it, because in fact that's probably kind of would stop you. And I started writing for myself during this period in notebooks at night, and without any intent of ever publishing it, or I was later encouraged to do that. But I think that writing or doing or putting your thoughts down and your ideas, you know, what you're going through, can be very, very helpful. You know, taking your abstract thoughts and feelings and making them concrete on a page is really something. I never understood, because I never did it as a kid or ever, why people kept diaries or journals. And I suddenly understood it, that you're kind of writing, you're writing to yourself, but it's as if you're writing to somebody out there. Do you know what I mean? It's like, let's say I'm writing this to one person in my mind, whoever that might be, and it's so helpful. And I would recommend that to people who have gone through trauma, loss, anything, you know, to sit down when you can. You can't always do it, but to sit down and write about it, because it's interesting. You remember things when you write, but you also, once you finish writing them and putting them down, it's as if you can move to something else and start to feel a little differently or slightly better about it, you know? These things take time, but there are ways to work your way through it.
Exactly. So, well, one of the things, of course, you've over the years that you've been always promoting writers and authors and encouraging people to write, and with the Crime Fiction Academy. So tell us how do you like to encourage writers? What are some of the things that?
Yeah, sure. I've been teaching writing for many, many years, and I do I did create in New York a place called Crime Fiction Academy at the Center for Fiction, which is, by the way, can I give a plug that the Center for Fiction did a podcast with me, and if people look for it, it's a really wonderful podcast done with the director of the Center for Fiction, Noreen Tomasi, who made me so comfortable and relaxed, and we had a great conversation. But, you know, I've worked with a lot of writers and a lot of students, and I find it very gratifying. What I tell my students, particularly the ones who I've been working with for a long time, but I say it all often, is several different things. One is read a lot. The other is write a lot. Get it down. It doesn't have to be good. Write it down. You can always come back. And then you can edit, which I believe in, you know, edit, self-editing all the time. But first, just get it down. It doesn't matter if it's a mess, you know. Get it down on paper, and then you'll look at it, and then you'll figure it out. You know, then you can cut it and shape it. And I, you know, one of the things I often do, or I always try and do with my writers, is to be encouraging because, you know, I think the world is hard enough. And you get knocked around plenty, you know. So I've had teachers in my life who I loved who were encouraging, and I had ones who were really rough and made you feel like you were never going to get anywhere. And I prefer,
you know, my third grade teacher then.
No.
Whew, she was rough.
Well, you know, I don't believe in that, to be honest. You know, I know that some teachers think, oh, I have to make you tough to toughen you up to the world. I think that works exactly in the opposite way, because you're not toughening someone up. What you're doing is discouraging them. And, you know, as I said, life is hard enough. So I encourage my students all the time, and I say to them, when you finish a story and you've rewritten it, don't send it out so you think it's really good and you've edited it. Then start sending it out to little magazines and I've gotten most of my students published. You know, it's one of my goals. Nothing makes me happier than to see my students succeed. I love it. The other thing I really say is you keep your work until it's ready very close to your chest. You should have one reader who will read, who has your best interest in heart, who's not competitive, who won't be cruel to you, but who will be honest and say, well, this part doesn't work, or this needs work, or this is rough, but not to give your work out to a whole bunch of people, because you're going to get a million different reactions and they're going to stop you. You know, you're going to get some bad reactions from people who are either jealous because they want to do it and they can't, or who knows why. But I think you have to be careful. You have to protect your work as much as you can, because you don't want to be discouraged, you know. You know, also, and I say this, and I look at, you know, I have a friend who's a poet, and she had 40 or 50 rejections for a book of poetry she was writing, and she was about to give up. All the rejections were so awful. And then she submitted that same group of poems to the Walt Whitman Award, and she won. It's the second highest poetry award in the country. And everyone who rejected her suddenly wanted to publish her book. So, you know, nothing succeeds like success, right?
Exactly.
You know, but, you know, all you need, and I say this to people all the time with editors and publishers, you just need one. You just need one person. You know, last night at this event at the 92nd Street Y, my first editor was there, Trish Grader, who believed in me and bought my first book 20-something years ago, The Death Artist.
Well, she did the right thing. Jonathan, I'm running out of time, but
okay,
I want to make sure. First, I want you to tell people about your website.
My website is www.jonathansantlofer. I know it's an impossible name. Jonathan. Santlofer .com. That's it. But you can find me if you look up my name, you can go to my website. I think it's pretty easy. I'm always mad at my parents for giving me a long first name since we had such a long last name. So that's why people call me Johnny, and you can too,
and,
Patsy.
And the new book is called The Widower's Notebook. And
The Widower's Notebook,
and
yes.
It's available wherever books are sold. It's yep. got a wonderful Joyce Carol Oates gave you a nice blurb on the cover. I think everyone should get this book, and I think they should also get Joy Santla for Loafer. It's Loafer.
Yeah, I know. People want to make it sound fancier, like that Loafer. But yeah, I know. It's just, I don't know.
Just you're a loafer. We'll remember it that way.
This book just came out, but it's out from Penguin Books. It's got great quotes that warm my heart from people like, you know, Andy Solomon and Lee Child and Michael Cunningham, and who were so generous and loved the book, and so that made me really happy.
Well, you deserve it because you've done a wonderful job, and it's a book that I think people will read and treasure, and they will want to share what they learn from this book. And again, Jonathan,
I hope they do.
You know,
thank you, Pat.
Thank you so much.
It's always great to speak with you.
It's always a joy to speak to you. And
you too.
I'll have you back on again soon. I hope that we'll maybe see Rodriguez back. I never know.
Well, I'm working on a big thriller at the moment.
Okay.
It's almost finished.
Well,
and so hopefully, yeah. And
okay.
Anytime, you know, I'd always love to talk to you.
Okay. Thank you again so
Alrighty.
Much for being on the
Thanks.
Program today. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Patsy. Bye.
Bye. Oh, wow. Wow. Okay, no commercial breaks, but I will remind you that all you have to do is go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code PATZI, and you can get a good deal. And also, if you need help with your intellectual property, you have to use Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. And they got me 4 patents, and they do all sorts of wonderful work for me. And I also want to remind everyone that from July 10th to August 20th at Barnes & Noble, you can find Carol J. Perry's books, 2 of her books on the Kensington display. And not many authors ever get to have 2 books at the same time. And the books that they're featuring for this month is Caught Dead-Handed and Tales You Lose. And then in September, on Tuesday, September 25th, she has a new book, her 7th book coming out, and it's called Bells, Spells, and Murder. So it's something to look forward to. If you just are looking for a wonderful, cozy read, something to just relax you and just while away the hours, you can't do anything better than go to Barnes & Noble and get Carol's books. They are wonderful. The covers are absolutely amazing. She has the best illustrator, one of the best illustrators in the business, has really captured her books, so you will really enjoy it. And meanwhile, remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. So make sure that you start writing, and who knows, one day they might be on the big screen or even the little screen, and you'll hear lights, camera, action. But you have to start. And also, of course, say something nice to somebody today. Say something nice to somebody every day. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, who's always so nice to me. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And I wish I was a general and I could just go ordering people around. Okay, everybody, have a great, great weekend. Bye-bye now.